for 19 years, Baruch Hashem, we've been learning Musa Seder together in a chabura. Started off with a smaller chabura and got bigger as the years went on. And we have a cycle of three svarim that we've done over the last few years. Mesiras Yesharim, Chovos HaLevavos, and Alei Shor. And as I was just saying, that Mesiras Yesharim is most precious to me because the words of Mesiras Yesharim are written in the language that he wrote it in, as opposed to, let's say, the Chovos HaLevavos. Come in, come in. As opposed to the word Chovos HaLevavos, you leave it open. You'll leave that one open. And the words of the Mesiras Yesharim, I personally find, and this is what we're going to see now in the introduction, are words that as you read them, if you read them with insight, they make you feel that you want to come close to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And there is a superficial way of reading Mesiras Yesharim as well, which if read in that, there's a chair over here. You want to tell me there's a chair there? If read in that way, then a person could say, like, what's the big chiddush? Like, what's the big deal over here? Why is this book held to be this great Musa work when I'm reading it, I'm not seeing such great. Let's come in and bring a chair with you. So I wanted just to give as an introduction, the sefer that we learned last year, Alei Shor, he wrote that everyone in yeshiva should ensure they're learning four svarim. There are four svarim that you have to ensure that you're learning in yeshiva to ensure that you'll become a ben Torah. The first is Mishnah Berurah. A person has to be grounded in practical halacha. The second is Chumash Rashi and Ramban, which laid down the foundation of Emunah. The third is Pirkei Avos with Rabbeinu Yonah, which lays down understanding of the Middos and how to work on them. And the fourth one is Mesiras Yesharim. Those are the four books that everyone has to ensure they're learning in Yeshiva. And he goes a short paragraph in each one, but when he gets to Mesiras Yesharim, he goes, like he loses track of the lines, and he just keeps writing and writing. I just want to read you a couple of lines from his introduction over here. He says, what was great about the Mesiras Yesharim was that he was a makubal. But in the Mesiras Yesharim, you don't see him using at all Kabbalistic language. Meaning he was able to take the Kabbalistic ideas, and he was able to, I wouldn't say water them down, but rather crystallize them in a way where he was able to give over those same deep concepts, but in a way which is tangible and relatable for everyone to be able to absorb and receive. And that was part of his greatness, that he made deeper elements of Torah accessible for everyone to read. But there's a t'nai which we're going to see as we read the introduction, which we'll see in a minute, in order to receive that depth. It seems like when someone starts learning Mesiras Yesharim initially, it seems like there's no chidushim, or few chidushim. It's hard for a person to see there's a chidushim. He says, but the more you learn it, as you learn again and again, the chidushim that come aren't chidushim in iyun, but rather they're chidushim in yourself. You start, as you learn Mesiras Yesharim more and more, you start to identify more and more of the words that he's saying in yourself, bring out the depth of understanding within yourself that enable you to live your life as a more authentic Jew. And then he quotes Rabbeinu Yerucham, who was his Rebbe in Avodas Hashem, who says that the Mesiras Yesharim is Kabbalah, written in our language, which gives us the foundation of how to enter our inner world. And as you read it again and again and again, you will find yourself having laid down the foundation for the deeper elements of Torah. That later on in your life, when you're ready to learn the deeper elements of Torah, the Meshech HaShanim, he said you already have the foundation in order to connect that deep element of Torah. So our way in learning Musa Svarim is to read and bring examples and sometimes parables and make diukim in order to make it real and tangible. We could sit here and just read the words from the beginning to the end, but then that's something which everyone could do by themselves as well. We wouldn't need a group of boys learning together. But in order to bring it down into our inner world, and in order to connect it to the emotion, to the heart, we're going to try and bring out examples, parables, and diukim to make it clear. Amar HaMachaber, HaChibur HaZeh Lo Chibarti LeLamed LeBnei Adam Et Asher Lo Yadu. So the Mesiras Yesharim starts by saying, I didn't write this book to teach you things you don't know. And sometimes people misread this line superficially, and they say, he's saying he's not teaching you anything new. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, I didn't write it in order to teach you things you didn't know. Meaning he's very aware that he may be teaching you things that are new, but that's not his point. He's coming to say that the goal of this book is not to teach chidushim. Ela lahaskiram et hayadu alehem kfar. Rather, the goal is, even though there may be many chidushim for you as you read through the book, he's not saying there won't be. But he's saying that's just not the purpose of the sefer. My goal is to help you tap into that which you already know. And it's known by you in a very great way. You're not going to find in my words only things that are well known and that which you don't have any doubt about. But because they're so well known, and because the truth of them is so well known, we'll explain in a minute the deal of those two. And here again we're going to have to make a deal. What's the difference between he'elem and shichacha? So I want to speak outside for a minute, and then we'll go back inside and see the dukim inside. There are two levels of knowledge. There's an external level of knowledge and an internal level of knowledge. External knowledge are things which, as well as you learning, in theory a computer could learn as well. It's something which a program could understand too. It's something which you learn, but it doesn't affect your inner world. It's something which your mind is able to absorb, but it didn't transform you in any way. That's called chokhmah in the deeper sources. It's information. It's information which can be picked up and can be analyzed. There's another level of knowledge, which is a different level of knowledge, which is called inner knowledge. And those are the things that you know just because you know. And you will not be able to test them in a laboratory, but you know them in a deeper way than you know the other areas. So just to give an example. I know that I love my children. I know it deeply. And I experience it daily. If someone would say to me, can you prove it? I would have a hard time proving it. And once I was challenged to do that. I was with a particular Rebbe who guided me in Avodas Hashem. And he said to me, why do you love your wife? And I had a very, very, very hard time answering that question. The more I tried to answer it, the more dissatisfied I was. She makes great chips. No, that's not it. She's got a great accent. No, it's not that either. She cleans up when I make a mess. No, that's not it. 1 minute. And the more I was trying to find an answer using my external knowledge, my seichel, my chokhmah, the further away I felt from what I knew that I felt. I know that I love, but when I'm trying to find an external reason for it, it's moving me away from the inner knowledge. We have two sources of knowledge, and we have to know when to use each one. There's a source of knowledge which is very valuable for a researcher. You have to use skills of intellect and understanding, and it's very important to know how to develop and use those skills. In Gemara learning, those are the main skills that we use. There's another area of knowledge, which is inner knowledge. And if you try and use the tools of chokhmah for inner knowledge, it's going to take you further and further away. It also works the other way, by the way. If you try and use the tools for inner knowledge, for learning Gemara, you're going to end up, imagine a girl is learning ksuva stuff, tet, Pesach Patuach Matzati. It's like, how could they make that claim in a Beis Din? Weren't they embarrassed for her? Like, think what she's going through. They're claiming that she's married and she was married before. And like, how could they do that? That's horrible. If you're trying to use inner world thought to answer an intellectual question, and you're saying, what do you mean? It's a Zweikzweiker. Like, I never thought of what she feels like. I don't care what she feels. It's a Zweikzweiker. There's a brilliant toast of why it's a Zweikzweiker. But like, what? Markesha to the inner world. So you have to know when to use each type of thought. And what Masilat Yesharim is guiding us here towards is to learn how to tap in to a new way of thinking. There are things that we know because we've analyzed and researched. And the truth is that we don't need to learn them again and again and again. Once you know them, you know them. I picked up a book 2 days ago, which I hadn't read in over a decade. But as I started reading it, I remembered the mahalach that it was saying. And I like tested myself, it's now going to say this, and I knew it, and this is this, and I knew it. And I was excited. Okay, I know it. There was a little value in me reading that again at that moment. If I would forget points, it's worth reading again. Because for the intellect, if you know, you know. How many people here have, you know, done review of their math textbooks from grade 3, 4, and 5? You don't need to. You know it. Maybe grade 12, you have to do continued research, continued chazara. But 3, 4, and 5, you know that. You don't need to do research. You know that you know it. You don't have to review it again and again. Make sure you remember your times tables, your multiplication. You know it. I'll prove it to you. Ask me a question. There, I know. I don't need to prove it again. That's intellectual knowledge. That's chokhmah. But inner knowledge is something which only if you're connected to are you connected to. Only when you're thinking about and you're aware of, does it exist? It always exists, but you may not be connected to it. And it's a different skill that you use. And if you try and ask on the areas which are about inner knowledge, the question why, it's going to move you further away. It's going to take you further. I'll tell a story. I told this to one of people last year, but I love this story. My sister-in-law was had been on a number of shidduchim with a particular boy, and he got stuck. It wasn't moving. So she asked, can we speak about it? So we sat together in a sukkah, happened to be, on sukkahs. And I thought maybe there's an issue. So I said, what are the issues? She said, there's no issues. So I said, so what about this, this, this? It went through all the different intellectual ideas, all the chokhmah points, and there was nothing left. So I said, so what's holding you back? So she said, how do you know? Now that's already not chokhmah. Because she's done all the research, all the analytical thought that one could do, she's done. So it's good. She says, no, is there anything more about him that you feel you need to know? Or do you? No, I know everything. I'm not. Is there anything that if you feel you'd go out for longer, you'd learn new things? I'm pretty sure not. Maybe nuances, but I feel I've got who he is. So how do you know? So we spoke about this idea of external knowledge and inner knowledge and trying to use analytical thought for topics that are inner world thought. And we learned the two different categories. And I said, when you know, you know. Do you know? She thought and she thought and she thought. And she realized that all that was holding her back was just fear of the unknown. But there was nothing actually left. And she realized that she knew that it was right. So I said, so you know. And she said, I know. And we walked out of the sukkah. My wife was sitting on the couch. And my wife said, what happened? So she said, yeah, we're going to get engaged. I said, what happened? So she said, Tzvi said, I know. I said, and you know? She said, I know. I said, what? But there's a type of inner knowledge which when you've tapped into, you know. And you can't use others. Are we clear on that yet? So let's read the words of the Mesez Sharm again. I didn't write this book to teach information. There may be a lot of new information here, but that's not the goal. The goal of Mesez Sharm is not to teach you chokhmah. It's not to teach you more information. There's many other valuable books for that. That's not the goal of Musa. What we're trying to do is to reawaken that which we already know, but we're not tapped into. Areas of emotions, areas of knowledge of myself, areas of knowledge of my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all those are areas which you know just because you know, not because you can prove. And if you try and prove, you lose the knowledge, you lose the sensitivity towards them. These are areas which are obvious to you. But because they're so obvious, a person doesn't contemplate them. And there's an issue here because these only exist by you when you're contemplating. Let me say it more accurately. They always exist by you. That's not true. They always exist by you. But you're only aware of them, conscious of them, activating them, and therefore relevant to you when you're contemplating them. It was a question that I had when I was younger. Why is it that the date of my birth, I can remember without having to review and review? The names of my children, I can remember without having to review and review. But Avodas Hashem, I have to review and review. Why is it that in Yirat Shemaim, you have to go over again and again and again? Why can't it be something which is, you just know. And I know and so. Like I learned it 10 years ago and now I know it and I still have it. Why do I have to go over it again and again and again? And as I was speaking it through with one of the boys here, I came to the understanding that there's a difference between something dead and something alive. Something which is dead, it's unchanging. A stone is not changing. So once you know it, you know it. It's not going to change. Your knowledge of it remains intact. But something which is alive and developing, then the fact that you knew it at one point is not relevant a moment later or 5 moments later because it's not the same anymore. It's an ongoing developing relationship. It will be extremely unhealthy if you would say to your wife, I love you once on the day of the marriage and never say it again because you told her under the chuppah that don't worry, I love you and if it changes, I'll let you know. Otherwise, just presume that the chazaka continues. That I still love you. I don't have to tell you that again. She says, well, you never tell me you love me. I told you under the chuppah. What? It didn't change. Nothing changed. The chazaka keeps going. Isn't that a rule? Chazaka kamaisa. There's no, isn't it? Did I tell you that I don't? The chazaka kamaisa continues. It doesn't work that way. Why doesn't it work that way? Because the relationship is alive. And a relationship is alive means that if you said that you love at a certain moment, then that only lasts for that moment. But as you both develop a moment later, there's no guarantee. Because you have to renew the relationship again and again. in all areas of the inner world, these are areas that are alive. The multiplication tables, they're not alive. They're fixed. Once you know them, you know them. You don't have to review them. If you forgot them, you have to review them. But you don't have to review them again and again. Where you're holding your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and actually where you're holding with your relationship with yourself, and certainly where you're holding relationship with other people who are important to you in your life, changes constantly. It's developing. It's becoming enriched as time goes on. That's something which you can't presume remains the same as it was. In fact, I once heard a mashal that if you put a stone on the ground on earth and you leave it there for a couple of weeks and no one moved it, so when you pick it up, what's going to be underneath? So you'd assume nothing. There was nothing under there when I put it down. But from experience over here, when you pick it up, there's worms and maggots and other things. Why is that? Because if you're not enriching the relationship constantly, then it's like a plant. A plant's alive. You have to water it. If you're not watering the plant, it will die. Anything which is alive, which is real, has to be constantly invested in, again and again and again. So Musar has to be learned again and again and again. Because you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship is developing constantly. And you have to be watering the relationship. So it's not like my date of birth or learning times tables, which are dead facts. They're important facts. I can use them constantly, but they are unchanging. The relationship with myself, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and with other people is alive. Anything which is alive, it may be obvious to me. It may be I well know it, like I expect my wife to know that I told her I love her under the chuppah. It's obvious. But it doesn't matter that it's obvious. Are you watering it right now? Are you engaging it? Is it remaining alive by you? It says this in Maseiros Yesharim, Kacha he'elem mehem matzui ma'od v'shichacha rabah. What's the difference between he'elem and shichacha? He'elem is where you choose to ignore something. Shichacha is where you forget it. Sometimes our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't suit us. For some reason, there's something else I want to do now, and the halacha doesn't exactly allow me to do all that I want to do. And therefore, it's convenient for me to forget the halacha at that moment. But it's not really forgetting. It's choosing to ignore. If it would be a live relationship, and you're aware that there's someone in front of you you're talking to now, you would have a sensitivity that you can't do that. But if you're able to put a blind in between you, and like an ostrich, pretend they don't see you at that moment, you can say, okay, it's fine. It's not harming the relationship what I'm doing right now. No one's looking. And you can do it. That's he'elem. A person prefers to pretend for a moment they're in a world without HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, they wouldn't say those words. But it doesn't suit them. They have something they need to do. They want to do. Do you hear what happened? They need to do it. It's not really that they need. They want to do it. But they tell themselves they need to do it. Surely Hashem would understand. No, no. Hashem is watching you. He's with you. He cares for you. Don't ignore him. He'elem. Sometimes it's not about choosing to ignore. Sometimes it's just about when any relationship, a person is self-centered to some degree and they forget. They just forget. They're so focused on their needs. Not that they're choosing to ignore, they just forget. The relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is alive. We have to be constantly watering it. You're not going to get much value from reading this book one time. Because what will happen? For the moment that you read it, it may be beneficial for you. And therefore it will be valuable. Your relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu will be enriched that one time you read it. But then what? It's like a stone that you put on the ground. Worms and maggots will come back. The relationship with Hashem is only as rich as your constant investing in it. It doesn't work automatically that you connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu and then you put autopilot on and it remains the same pace the whole life. It's like a car which if you're pressing on the pedal, then you're going fast. And once you take your foot off the pedal, it goes slowly. It doesn't stop immediately, but it goes slowly. And as you feel that you're losing speed, you have to put the pressure on again. And you know, the Vilna Gaon, he used to learn Maseiros Yesharim. In fact, he was so impressed by Maseiros Yesharim, he said that if Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto was alive in his time, he would have walked on foot from Vilna to Italy to learn Torah by his feet. Because there's not a word wasted in the first at least 9 chapters. Every word the Grower's Medayken. How would he learn Maseiros Yesharim? How would he learn it? He didn't have Musar Seder from 7 till 7:30. What was his derech? This is how he learned. It's amazing. He would learn Iyun. You know, you can see. He's got commentaries on all of Shas. He's got commentaries on all of Torah and Shulchan Aruch. He's got commentaries on Zohar. He was learning B'Iyun. And whenever he felt that he needed Chizuk, I don't know what that means for the Gra. Everyone can understand. I know what I need in Chizuk. So on his level, he also felt that he needed Chizuk. He would pause his learning. He would open Maseiros Yesharim, pick up where he left off, learn, 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 Maseiros Yesharim, felt reconnected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again, and then go back to his learning. That was his derech alimut, just like in a car. You put your foot on the gas, as long as it's going well, it's going well. Once you feel that you're slowing down, you need to put your foot on the gas again, you press it down. And also he would learn Mr. Sharon before he would go out to the street. When he would go out to the street, when he would leave his room where he was learning and go out to the street, then he knew at that moment he wouldn't be as focused and connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the distractions of the world would distract him. And in order to stay focused in his Avodas Hashem, he would read the Perek of Zehirus, which is the chapter, the first section after the introduction and the first chapter, which teaches a person about how to have control in areas where there are foreign ideas coming to harm you. And he would hold on to those words of Mr. Sharm throughout the time that he was there. That was his chizuk that he needed, to learn the Mr. Sharm, to keep the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu alive. So you won't get so much benefit from reading it one time, because you'll get benefit momentarily. But it's an ongoing relationship of love that we have with Hashem. Because if you're reading it one time, and you're understanding it, it's like all the books that I read once. Why do I read a book once? For the information. That's the goal. That's using the seichel. If you're reading it for the seichel, then it's possible that you won't find in your seichel many chidushim after reading it one time. Maybe here and there a few chidushim, but that's not the reason why I'm writing the book. I'm writing the book for the ideas to enter the soul, to enter the heart, to transform you so you'll feel that you have an ongoing live relationship with Hashem. Aval ha-toeles yotzeh min ha-chazorah alav ve-asmoda. The benefit you'll have is chazorah and... What's the difference between chazorah and hasmoda? Chazorah could be that you leave it for 2 years and then you pound, pound, pound chazorah. Hasmoda is where you do something constantly throughout your life. Consistently, day after day after day after day. Reviewing it again and again. That's where it's going to enter you. Like the relationship with a husband and a wife. Only where you're ongoing building relationship with small increments. What's amazing, and this is the key, it's going to save you a lot of money, what I'm going to say now. What's amazing about investing in a marriage is it's not the size of the gift that you give, it's the frequency. I've just saved you thousands of dollars. You can give a chocolate every day, and she will feel more enriched that you love her and care for her than once a year on anniversary you buy her a diamond ring. And it's cheaper to buy a chocolate every day. It's much cheaper. Because it's not about the value of the gift. It's about the hasmoda. The relationship is being invested in. The relationship is being invested in. I care about the relationship. Our relationship is alive. I care for you. I love you constantly. That's how Musa works. It doesn't work that Aseret Yemei Teshuva, you pound a Musa Sefer, and then the hope for the best, God, please let me get through these 10 days. And then the rest of the year, you put it on hold. Because as well as Chazara, you need Hasmoda. And therefore, he's careful in his words, Chazara and Hasmoda, in order for the constant, constant. Everyone knows the famous story of Rabbi Akiva, how he became Frum. There was a water dripping on a rock, and it made a hole in the rock. What was he so excited about in that story? When he saw the water dripping on the rock, what made him say, wow, if water can penetrate through a rock which is hard, then so too the words of Torah, which are like fire, can penetrate my soul, which is made of flesh. What was so exciting to him about that chiddush? Perhaps every drop that he saw dripping down, he didn't see any difference in the rock. You see a drop, it looks the same. You see a drop, it looks the same. But he saw there's a hole. What does that teach you? That teaches you that even when you're doing small actions of Avodas Hashem, you're learning Musa daily, daily, daily. And you don't see that daily Musa of today had any effect. Because there was no big chiddush that came today. What chiddush was there? Nothing, no chiddush. It was all ideas that I had heard already. There was no chiddush. So you feel, okay, so what difference did it make? That's what Rabbi Kiva probably thought initially. But when he saw the hole in the rock and he realized that even if to the naked eye it doesn't look like it's making a difference, but day after day after day of learning Musa, of learning Torah, it penetrates the heart. It's able to make a hole in the rock. And he realized that even if I don't see it on a daily basis, subtly it's obviously having an effect. So you not only does one need chazara, one needs hasmada. Ki yizkeru lo dvar ma'ele hanishkachim mibnei adam b'teva. Because then you will recall those ideas that you forget. And we made a deal before about forgetting and about he'elem. He's going to use both again now. Because it will reawaken to the ideas that you forget b'teva naturally. People forget things naturally. A person in this world is so involved in so many matters. Arranging which shir everyone's in, who's going to learn with who, which chavrusa, who the roommates are, who are singing the bass measure. There's so many technical things that a person gets involved in that a person forgets about his avodas Hashem. So by learning Musar on a daily basis, it will realign him. But not only that, there are certain things that he chooses to ignore. V'yasim al libo. And by learning Musar, it will force him to pay attention. Look here, my friend. I know you're ignoring that particular point, and I know it's convenient for you on some level to ignore it. You have some side benefit by ignoring this particular halacha or this particular area of your Avodas Hashem, but I want you to pay attention. When you face the truth and you realize that Kodesh Baruch Hu is standing there, you can't ignore it beyond it. So the learning of Musa that we are going to gain, Be'ezat Hashem, as we're learning through Maseiat Yesharim, is not only the information that one could gain, that you could just read as English translation and finish it much quicker, but the goal that we're going to learn is how to tap in, not to the intellect, but how to let these words tap into our inner world. To learn how to develop Musa as Yirat Shamayim. Not just that you understand intellectually what the words of Musa mean, but you learn, and we'll learn together, and experience how it can transform you. How the words can be transformative. And with small increments, day after day, of learning Musa, it will transform us to being B'nai Torah. Shakar. As far as scheduling is concerned, there's a 3/4 of a